American Literature Podcast Number 7, Emily Dickinson, Publication History. Emily Dickinson is an accidental poet, a private poet, who tucked handwritten poems into bundles of flowers that she sent to her neighbors, and she was in her day better known for her gardening than for her writing. Dickinson is famous now, anyway, for her habit of using dashes instead of more conventional punctuation. But if you read the Project Gutenberg edition of the collected poems of Emily Dickinson, you'll find very few dashes. That's because her editors, when they collected her poems in the first place, corrected her unconventional punctuation, and they made other changes too. Dickinson is also famous now for using capital letters creatively, turning common nouns into proper nouns. But her first editors had typed up some of those poems on an early typewriter that had only capital letters. The printer who laid out the pages at the publishing house had to decide on his own what letters to capitalize, and that's the version that was first published. One of the few poems published in her lifetime appeared in a college publication, and in her 20s she made a few brief visits outside her hometown of Amherst, Massachusetts. She visited Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. In her 30s she went to Boston for a medical treatment for her eyes, but she spent almost the whole of her adult life living in her parents' home. Her father was a college administrator and later a congressional representative. When her father gave official parties, she would play the role of the hostess. And visitors found her charming and intelligent and accomplished, but she herself seemed really satisfied with a very, very small family circle. With her in her parents' house lived her sister, Lavinia, and in a house next door lived their brother, Austin. Austin married a friend of Emily's, and Emily was a frequent visitor to this household. As was typical in days before Facebook, Dickinson wrote a lot of letters, mostly to family and her childhood friends, and sometimes she sent poems along with those letters. She also corresponded with some professional men, educated men, a newspaper editor, writers, political activists, a judge. Emily was in her 40s when her father and mother both died within the same year. And from then on, Emily and her sister lived in the house together. Emily made regular, perhaps daily, visits to the house of her brother and his wife, her friend. But for many years, she saw almost nobody else. There are reports that she would stay out in the hallway and speak to people inside the room. She wouldn't enter the room when guests came. Yet Dickinson's surviving letters include three drafts of love letters that she sent to someone she called Master. We have no idea who this Master is. When she was in her 50s, a distinguished judge who visited her a couple times in her house gave her a copy of Shakespeare's works. And I have seen the relationship with this judge described as a romance. But we know very little other than the fact that Emily Dickinson's strongest relationships seem to be on paper. Through the letters that she wrote and the half dozen or so poems that she published in her lifetime, nearly all of them anonymous. When she died at age 55, her sister Lavinia burned all her letters, which makes you think that maybe she had something to hide. But actually, this was fairly typical of the time period. It was a way of respecting the privacy of the deceased. Now, these letters that were burned, these really, most of them weren't letters that Emily wrote, I imagine, but letters that other people had sent to Emily. And perhaps those letters contained dark secrets that really were meant for nobody but Emily. So burning those letters was an act of respect for the friendship that people had for Emily. Of course, we can only imagine what was burned. Now, while she was going through her sister's paper, Lavinia found some poems in a drawer. Well, more than a few, actually. Several hundred poems, all of them handwritten, many of them in rough form, with multiple different versions of lines, as if Emily hadn't decided yet which version was the best. She also left poems on the insides of envelopes and on the backs of to-do lists and in letters that she sent to other people. Lavinia had known that her sister dallied with poetry, but she had no idea just how serious she was about it. And nor did Lavinia really, before Emily's death, had any real idea of Emily's talent. Fortunately for the literary world, Lavinia contacted various publishers. She enlisted the help of Thomas Wentworth Higginson, a minister who had, during the Civil War, led a troop of escaped slaves in a Union regiment. It was, I believe it was the first federal regiment of African-American soldiers. Afterwards, Colonel Higginson devoted his life to fighting for the rights of these former slaves. Now, he was an experienced author and publisher, and a bit on the radical side, and he knew Emily slightly. He would look at the poems if someone had sorted and organized them. Now, remember, these were on scraps of paper, and Emily's handwriting was as quirky as her poetry. So Lavinia figured she needed help. She turned to a woman named Mabel Loomis Todd, who was the wife of a faculty member at the nearby college. But Mabel Loomis Todd had another relationship to the Dickinson family. She was actually the longtime mistress of Austin. Now, Mabel sorted through Emily's poems, choosing, and sometimes choosing, it seemed almost at random, between the alternate words and alternate readings that Emily had written down. Mabel corrected the spelling. She chose synonyms to patch up the rhyme scheme, and she just basically changed the poems around. Carefully, she thought. Usefully, she thought. She hired an assistant to type many of these poems, and some of them on that typewriter that had only capital letters that I mentioned earlier. And Mabel also hand-wrote clean copies of these poems herself. And using a guide that Colonel Higginson devised for her, Mabel sorted the poems into A, B, and C class poems, now according to quality. And then she presented this stack to Higginson. And Higginson went through the stack, putting an X on poems he did not think were worth publishing. He added titles to poems that he thought needed titles. And he sent a letter back to Mabel saying he was going to divide the poems up into four groups. And he named those groups Love, Life, Nature, and the fourth group, Time and Eternity. And that was the organizational structure for the first volume of Dickinson's poems, published in 1890, 4 years after Emily died. If you see a publication date attached to an Emily Dickinson poem, you should know that Emily never dated her poems herself. I mean, we can make a guess about when she authored the poem in the cases of those poems that she copied in letters that she sent out. But in general, with all the sorting and shuffling that went on from Lavinia's work and from Mabel Loomis Todd's work and from Higginson's organization, this volume of Emily Dickinson's poems gives us no clue whatsoever as to when she wrote each poem and what order she might have wanted them to appear. This first volume, edited by Mrs. Todd and Colonel Higginson, sold extremely well, multiple runs selling out, more books being printed several times in a few months. Within a few years, a second volume of poems and also a two-volume collection of Emily's letters was published, and presumably these are letters that Emily had written and sent to other people. And once Emily became famous, those other people dug those letters out of their drawers and volunteered them to the editors now that their author was famous. A third volume of Emily's poetry, with now Mabel Loomis Todd was working on her own without Colonel Higginson's help, came out. And then another volume titled Complete Poems was published that was a combination of all three of those works. Now, something happened around this time that reminds us really what literary life was like in the days before word processors or photocopiers. Emily's sister Lavinia and Mabel was the former mistress of, Mabel was the mistress of Austin, Emily and Lavinia's brother. Lavinia and Mabel had a falling out. Lavinia and Mabel had a falling out. Before Austin died, he had asked Lavinia to will a tract of land to Mabel. After Austin died, Lavinia went to court to undo that action, and the court ruled in Lavinia's favor, but this actually caused a big rift between Lavinia and Mabel. What matters for us is that that pile of Emily Dickinson's handwritten poems, that physical stack of hundreds of them had been published, but she wrote over 1,000. This physical stack of unpublished poems got split up, with Lavinia the sister taking some, and Mabel the mistress of the dead brother taking the other. For the next 60 years or so, these separate stacks were sorted and edited and cataloged and just treated in different ways by different editors who did not have access to the other stack. After Lavinia died, her share of the poems went to her niece Martha. This was one of the children that would have grown up in Austin's house. So Emily would have known Martha as a child and been close to her. Now, some years later, in 1914, this niece, Martha, published another collection of poems. She published more letters. And finally, in 1924, she published The Complete Poems of Emily Dickinson. Or, well, maybe not so complete, because 5 years later, she published further poems of Emily Dickinson. By this time, Emily Dickinson was firmly entrenched as one of America's great literary voices. And in the 1930s, this is after about 30 years of sitting on her stash of material, Mabel Loomis Todd puts out another volume, Letters of Emily Dickinson. And later on, Martha, this is Emily's niece, publishes Unpublished Poems of Emily Dickinson. And then she publishes Poems by Emily Dickinson. It's probably a good thing that Martha didn't claim that this collection was complete, because, well, after more years of apparently sitting on her collection, Mabel Loomis Todd dies. But her heir, a Millicent Todd Bingham, I'm guessing by the name that that's a married daughter of Mabel Loomis Todd, Millicent Todd Bingham publishes Bolts of Melody, New Poems of Emily Dickinson. It's co-credited to Mabel Loomis Todd. This was a huge volume, 640 unpublished poems. It more than doubles the number of poems published by an author that was already by this time famous. So now we have two different sets of Emily Dickinson archives. They're competing versions of people trying to publish works to sort of capture Emily Dickinson's identity and really define who she is as an author. Harvard University, around 1960, acquires Lavinia's share of the manuscripts, and Harvard is trying to gain control over the poems that had been passed on through Mabel Loomis Todd to Martha. Mabel Loomis Todd's heir first publishes a book telling Mabel's side of the story about the lawsuit and the whole publication dispute. But eventually, Mabel's heir lets a scholar named Thomas H. Johnson look at this collection of handwritten poems. Now, Johnson has access to the Harvard collection, and now for the first time, the same scholar also has access to Mabel's collection as well. So, Lavinia's collection and Mabel's collection both get published in a book called The Complete Poems of Emily Dickinson in 1960. Johnson is the one that we can credit for really recovering and really presenting to the world Emily's consistent theory about Emily's use of the dash. This dash gives her poetry even more of this rough and breathless look that we can see through the words themselves, even though those words in the punctuation have already been through multiple layers of interpretation. The editors thought they were in good faith improving the work, but we today are far more interested in looking more carefully at a careful transcription of what Emily actually wrote, even though she clearly made mistakes. She made spelling mistakes, and her rhyme scheme was sometimes off. Some of her poetry was clearly unfinished, but we now have this in 1960, The Complete Poems of Emily Dickinson. And really, for the first time, someone has a good reason to call this collection complete, because all her poems that we knew of at the time were published in that work. Now, even though as late as 2006, there are unpublished Emily Dickinson manuscripts popping up, and I'm far from an expert on Emily Dickinson, so for all I know, there's still more unpublished poems out there. Now, this poem that Mrs. Todd and Colonel Higginson chose to begin that first collection of poems, the poem I'm about to read to you has really stood to symbolize much of the literary world's puzzled respect at this reclusive genius poet of Amherst. This poem comes right after the introduction, right before the first group of poems that Higginson titled Life. So here's the poem that began the first volume of Emily Dickinson's poems way back in 1890. This is my letter to the world that never wrote to me, the simple news that nature told with tender majesty. Her message is committed to hands I cannot see. For love of her, sweet countrymen, judge tenderly of me. Now, this simple news that nature told, the word nature is capitalized. So we gather that for love of her means for love of nature. Nature can certainly mean grass and trees, but placed here at the beginning of the book of Emily Dickinson's poetry, I think we're encouraged to read it as meaning inherent talent, this talent that you're born with rather than schooled into knowing. The world has indeed judged tenderly of Emily Dickinson, maybe sometimes a bit too protectively. Was she a victim of the patriarchy with her will crushed because as a woman she had so little hope of publishing? Or was she a privileged genius with a supportive family, this well-connected father who saw that she got a good education and provided her with a stimulating household, and this family that supported her interests and, very importantly, gave her this leisure time during which she could hone her skill free from financial obligation? That's one way of looking at her. Her seclusion, her refusal to marry, her independence from everybody, was that a heroic feminist choice? Now, because she wrote so many letters that have been published and really pored over by scholars, there is plenty of material for us to explore these questions about her life. But as with any literary question, the question wouldn't be worth studying, and it wouldn't generate volumes of commentary and articles if there were any easy answers about Emily Dickinson's life. Well, keep this in mind then when you read through her poetry, and just because the original publication presented those nature poems in a particular order, all we know for certain is that this order is not an order imposed by the poet herself. So any assumptions that we make about, you know, why this poem follows that one, or observing that the overall shape of that nature selection of poems, it starts with a poem that mentions still the pensive spring returns, and that collection of nature poem ends with there's a certain slant of light on a winter afternoon. So we've got a motion from spring through all the seasons to winter, which was, I think, fairly conventional. But all we know for certain is that Emily Dickinson did not arrange her poetry this way. This was an arrangement that was ascribed from the outside. So I hope this background gives you a little bit of information that you can use as you take a look at Emily Dickinson's poetry itself. And as you contemplate the document, the arrangement in which these poems are presented, think a little bit about how the knowledge of the editorial history of these poems affects your ability to do a close reading. Okay, a happy reading of Emily Dickinson's poetry, and I'll see you in class.